If you run a company or manage a team, hiring qualified people quickly can make or break your business. Imagine a position of need going unfilled for weeks or even months because you just can't seem to find the right candidate. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. This makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there's no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results on your job post. Just in the last minute that I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data, worldwide. Now that is fast. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BWN. Go to Indeed.com/BWN right now to support this podcast. Indeed.com/BWN. Terms and conditions apply.
It's the last game of the season, and with Amex, you can save time with card member entrances at select venues and go straight to the action so you can catch every moment. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Aces on the Air.
Evansville has turned Greenville from Pirate Purple to Purple Aces Purple. And for the first time in program history, Evansville has won a regional.
The official podcast for Evansville Athletics.
Evansville fans have won in 18 long years. For the first time since 2006, the Aces are Missouri Valley Conference Tournament Champions.
Aces on the Air is brought to you by Taroni's Pizzeria and Brewery. Claim a $3 off voucher at any 2024-2025 UE Athletic event on campus.
Now it's Cuff, left corner three. Bingo! Bingo!
Every episode of Aces on the Air is available on Spotify, Apple, and online at GoPurpleAces.com.
Wow. And the Aces have gone the road to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, and stunned the number one Wildcats 67-64.
Now, here's the voice of the Aces, Jevin Redmond.
From the Purple Aces Sports Network, this is Aces on the Air, brought to you by Taroni's and powered by Learfield. I'm Jevin Redmond. Thanks for joining us this week. A very special episode, a name familiar to many people throughout the Evansville market in broadcasting. It is Adam Alexander, right now working in NASCAR, NASCAR on Amazon Prime Video, Turner Sports, CW, doing play-by-play. And he's had a very prestigious career, which started here in Evansville back in the mid to late 90s. So good to see Adam again. And Adam, thanks for your time this week. Aces on the Air. And how are things going?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me, Jevin. It's always good to reconnect with everyone in Evansville and always looking for an excuse to do that. So this is a great opportunity. I appreciate you having me and look forward to catching up.
Yeah, we're going to work through kind of your career and really focus on your time at Evansville. You used to call men's basketball games for the Purple Aces and many other things throughout the Evansville market. But just maybe update Aces fans on kind of what your role is right now in NASCAR and who all you're working for.
You just kind of went through the rundown, and it's really been a crazy time the last year or so in the NASCAR world, because 2024 ended a 10-year run of a media rights deal. And so there were a lot of new players. And ironically enough, I moved to one of the more stable players in Fox, who's been around since 2001. And I've been doing work with them since the end of 2016, whether it was with Fox or Speed. They own the old Speed network that's been converted to FS1. And so I moved away from that group, and I'm now working with all the new players. You touched on it, CW. I'll be doing all the Xfinity races on the CW network, which really kind of matches up with what I was doing at Fox. I did their Xfinity coverage, even though they didn't have the full season. And then I'll add in some Cup races. Amazon Prime Video is in for the very first time, so I look forward to jumping in with them as they begin their first steps into the NASCAR world, and we'll call five races there this summer. And then I'll also piggyback off of that and do five races with Turner Sports. And I had worked with TNT and Turner Sports back in 2010, 2014 run at the end of that last TV deal. So interesting how it all came together. It's going to be a fun, exciting, and very busy year, no doubt.
You're an Indiana guy. You grew up in Madison, Indiana. Of course, went to Vincennes University, also University of Evansville, and here you are working long time as a broadcaster. So, as a kid growing up, was that always a goal of yours, or did you kind of just stumble upon that once you got into college?
No, I always wanted to do that. I always a sports fan, huge college sports fan growing up. My dad went to Purdue, and so I was always a Purdue guy growing up. And then when I was middle school age, we moved to Indianapolis. My dad got a job there. And I was very fortunate when I went to high school at North Central High School that we had a tremendous radio and TV program. So it really laid it out there for me at age 16 to be doing what I wanted to do. I played football, so I couldn't get any experience calling football games, but I did all of our high school basketball games my junior and senior year, did a few girls games in addition to the boys games, but we did all the boys games on the radio. And at North Central, what was great about that at the time, we were not in a conference. So we would go out and play the best of the best. And so I got to go to all those great, high school gyms around the state of Indiana, and we would go north and come south. And it was really, really a great opportunity for someone who grew up as such a big fan as I was of both high school and college basketball. And then, went to Vincennes and was able to kind of further it there because they have a tremendous program in getting kids on the air. And once I got down to Evansville and started working in local television, I was just kind of up for anything and started making some connections at the university through local TV, and then eventually got the opportunity to do some radio. And from then on, really that credibility of doing Division I college basketball helped me lay a strong foundation for my career.
Where does the passion for racing come from? Because it sounds like, hey, you're interested maybe in the basketball, baseball, football area early on, but when did NASCAR racing spark the interest in you?
It's funny, growing up in Indy, we were around the Indy 500 all the time. You couldn't escape it. But I wasn't a huge motorsports fan. I followed IndyCar, especially when, during the month of May when they were getting ready for the 500. But I wasn't like a huge fan. I didn't grow up in a family that we followed it really closely. But ironically, Evansville basketball is what led me to that. And it did so in this way. We were doing the Jim Crews radio show. I don't remember what night it was, Tuesday, Wednesday night, whatever night. Maybe it rotated depending on the Aces schedule. But we would do his radio show at Taroni's. And the man who sold that and kind of helped produce that show was a man named Bill Edson, who was based in Owensboro, Kentucky. And Bill, as we worked toward the end of that season, came to the show one night and handed me a one-sheeter. And he said, "What do you think of this idea?" And it was basically the format of the Jim Crews show, but it was all racing. Let's get local drivers on. Let's talk to track promoters, and let's ju just do an on-site racing radio show. And so he had a venue picked out that was going to buy the time down in Owensboro, and I looked at it and I said, "You put that together, and I'll host it." And I kind of said that sarcastically. So about a month later, Bill calls me on the phone and says, "I just want to make sure you're ready to go tomorrow night." And I'm like, "What's tomorrow night?" And he said, "Well, we're doing that racing show." And I'm like, "I can't do that. I don't know racing." And he's like, "Well, we've promoted it and we don't have anybody else. You're doing it." And so that's kind of how I got in. But then through that, I met a lot of people in the local motorsports community. And there were so many influential people in that region at the time that they really helped me grow and go. Gary Exline, who was the general manager at WBKR Radio, which was an MRN affiliate. I mentioned Bill Edson, the people at Tri-State Speedway, Bob and Jan Stobbs, who worked there. I mean, just across the board, there were so many people that I got connected with that then helped me advance to a national level. And really, all of that's what led me to where I am today.
So how was that first racing show?
We survived. And it was really funny how that show evolved. And here, let me tell you what's really funny about it. We started at a place over in Owensboro called Frankie Sports Bar. And one of our sponsors, a guy who really believed in motorsports, was a guy named Chris Blythe, who was the general manager at the Texas Roadhouse over in Owensboro. And he said, we want to put some money behind this thing. And we want to bring it to Texas Roadhouse. And so they did. And we started doing it from his place. And there was a NASCAR Xfinity, NASCAR Busch Series at the time, team based in Central City, Kentucky. Clarence Brewer, a businessman, had started a team, and their shop, not in the Carolinas, was based in Central City, Kentucky. And their driver was a kid named Jamie McMurray from Joplin, Missouri. Very talented kid. And so occasionally on Tuesday nights, the crew would drive up from Central City and have a couple of drinks and eat a steak and be a part of the radio show. Jamie would come with them. Well, ironically, Jamie's career exploded on track. He eventually wins a Brickyard 400, a Daytona 500. And we mentioned earlier my new ventures in motorsports in 2025 in NASCAR. I'll be doing a ton of races in the booth with Jamie McMurray. So years ago, he would pop on this radio show. He has this great career as a driver, and now he's the lead analyst on one of these deals for me. So it's crazy how small the world is and how it all kind of comes full circle.
People listening to this are, for the most part, Evansville fans, Evansville basketball fans, so they know how important the program is to the Evansville community. When you were calling games back in the mid to late 90s or so, Jim Cruz was the head coach, and you were the broadcaster during a good era of Aces basketball. So while that was early on in your career and, you know, you've gone to bigger markets, done much bigger things, but that time as the voice of the Purple Aces, how special is that to you, part of your career?
Well, it's a part of my life that, you know, will never go away. And to this day, there are relationships that I built at that time that are, you know, very, very important to me. And there are a number of people that I could list that were very influential. But one, when I first got that job, I was the analyst. I was not doing the play-by-play. And the person who single-handedly got me that job and moved me into that position and went to bat for me was Bob Buck, who was doing the games prior to me. Bob and I had done some local TV together. TSN, it was a local sports station at that time that was owned by WEVV. That's where I got a lot of play-by-play experience. And Bob and I had done some stuff there, and Bob just really took me under his wing and wanted to help me. And so when that analyst job opened up, he went to bat for me and helped me get that job. And, you know, Bob passed away midway through that first season that we were together. And that's when I moved into the play-by-play role. But the influence that Bob had on me, Bob would actually come do games with me in other sports or maybe at the high school level. And he would just very humbly sat in the analyst seat so that I could get that play-by-play experience. And Bob would make notes about my work while we were on the air together. I mean, literally, I would get to the end of a quarter of a game or halftime, and he would have a few things that he noticed that I needed to work on. So Bob not only was a great friend, and not only did he go to bat for me and help me advance in my career and get opportunities, but he was just a huge mentor for me in the growth process early in my career. So that was one person that came from Evansville basketball that was huge. Bob Boxall was the SID at the time. And Bob and I became, you know, way more than just a working relationship. Bob and I are still friends today. He lives in Wisconsin now. And I went to Wisconsin last summer and visited with Bob. And he's been to the Carolinas to visit and see our family. So, you know, Bob and I are just the best of friends, and that relationship never would have come to fruition if it weren't for my time at Evansville and Evansville basketball. And then I think about that coaching staff. You know, Jim Cruz is just a tremendous friend. And I think about some of the lessons I learned in life and the way I do things and my approach to career and family and raising kids. And so much of that influence came, I would go to a lot of practices and be around those guys and just the way they did business. So Coach Cruz and I've stayed in touch. You know, Marty Simmons, who was there as an assistant that is now, you know, at Eastern Illinois, he and I have stayed good friends. Kirk Sarf was on that staff. Kirk's not in coaching now, but he lives over in Illinois. We stay in touch. You know, Scott Schreffler and I, Brent Kell was an analyst, Jeremy Wolf. There are just so many people that were a part of that era of Evansville basketball that I got to be friends with, and we've stayed in touch up right until today.
You just mentioned how important, you know, Coach Cruz was to you and your career, whether at, you know, hosting the shows or just even, you know, off the air and whatnot. But Aces fans love Coach Cruz. They also love Coach Cruz stories. Is there one that you like to tell people about working with Coach Cruz?
You know, there's two things I'd say about Coach Cruz. Some of the most enjoyable times I ever had with him was before games, both at home and away, when I would go in and I would record the pregame interview. And at home, he was always in the same office, had that little coach's area that was at Roberts Stadium, just off the locker room. And we'd go in there and we would, you know, do our interview. And I always enjoyed that. I just savored that time with him. That was so special to me to be with him right before they went out there and started the game. So that was great. On the road, though, he always wanted a place to be away, and you never knew where he might be. And so it was almost like a hide and seek thing with Coach Cruz on the road to do the pregame interview. I'd have to go find him. And that was always interesting, not knowing where he might be. And then when you found him, you know, what was his mood going to be? Was he going to be in the mood to talk? And, or, you know, or he might say, who are the officials tonight? He was always curious about that. And he would analyze the job that they might do. So I always enjoyed that. And that was really good. But one night, I'll never forget, we were doing the Jim Cruz radio show. And it was in 1996, I think. We were at Taroni's, and there were a lot of people from the Purple Aces Club there, among them Jim Brownlee, baseball coach. And he looks out in the crowd, and he starts yelling, Casey Stengel. And I didn't know who that was, right? Like, you know, he was this legendary at the major league level as a manager, and that he was sarcastically calling Brownlee that. And we get to the break, and I said, I'm like looking out in the crowd trying to figure out who he's talking to, right? Because I knew most of the people there. And anyway, I asked Coach Cruz, who were you talking to? He said, you don't know who that is? Wait a minute, you're a sports broadcaster and you don't know who that is? And he lets me have it live on the air when we come back. So then the next week, we were playing in the preseason NIT in New York City. We had made the semifinals. It was an unbelievable moment to be there at Madison Square Garden. We get there, we go to the arena, and Dick Vitale was doing the game. And Dick Vitale's at our shoot-around. And so when the practice is over, shoot-around's over, Coach Cruz comes over to, you know, do what coaches would do with the TV broadcasters. And Coach Cruz calls me over, and I'm so excited thinking that this is going to be my big moment to meet Dick Vitale. And he totally throws me under the bus and outs me for my lack of knowledge on his radio show. So it was pretty funny, but Coach Cruz was great and just a wonderful friend.
So we're taping this on a Monday. We had a game last night at home against Valparaiso, and I told my partner, Scott Schreffer, who you did games with for a short period of time, that I was recording this on Monday. And he said, well, you have to bring up, he believes it was a game against Bradley. You guys got to laughing so hard that either you had to step away from the microphone or whatnot. Something about maybe wearing makeup. What all was that story?
Well, you know, I had been at that time, I had started working in NASCAR. So I would go away for a couple of games at the beginning of the NASCAR season to do, like, you know, the Daytona 500 weekend. You know, the Daytona 500 was just this weekend. And so I would miss a couple of games. And I had been away in Florida doing, you know, the races, and, you know, the weather was nice. And so I had gotten some sun, and, you know, we get to Bradley, we drove to Peoria, and we were sitting up there, and I don't know if you still do the games, but at Bradley, you wouldn't sit courtside. You would sit like up in the middle of the arena. And Bob Boxall was to my left. Bob would do the stats, you know, and Scott was to my right. And we get in the middle of the commercial break, and Scott looks at me, and I don't know if he thought because I was away doing work for someone else that, like, that job required makeup or whatever, but because my skin, you know, had some color because of the sun that I got when I was in Florida, Scott looks at me and says, are you wearing makeup? And I'm like, what? And I don't know why that was so funny to us, but we got so tickled. Now, luckily, we were in a commercial break, but when it's time to come back, I think I've got myself composed. And, you know, there was a little liner that would bring us back from the affiliates. You know, you're listening to Evansville basketball or whatever the terminology was on the liner. And as soon as I heard that and knew it was time to go, I lost it again. And I couldn't get it together. I just couldn't. And I remember we came back, and, you know, Bob Box was not happy. I mean, he was kind of in charge, and he's upset with us not knowing why. And I think Scott, you know, did get up and walk away to try to help me, you know, pull it together. And eventually I got going again, but I didn't sound like myself. I mean, I was just kind of wheezing through the play-by-play, but it was a good moment. And like Scott, I'll never forget that.
Do you have any favorite Aces players that you broadcasted back in the day?
Well, you know, 1999 was an unbelievable year when Evansville went to the tournament, and Marcus Wilson was just, gosh, he was just incredible. I mean, it was just such a fun year to watch Marcus do his thing. And, you know, he got hot in New Orleans in the first half against Kansas. And, even though Evansville got beat, you felt like, oh my gosh, this is going to be one of those moments where this guy that you don't know about gets going and makes a difference, and there's a big upset. It didn't turn out to be that way, but there were so many moments throughout that season that it was really fun, covering Marcus. Chris Hollander was a player with that group the year before. I enjoyed him. I remember Jeremy Stanton was a tremendous defensive player from Illinois. Great kid. Kyle Runyon, I enjoyed. Craig Snow, has been a big part of the Evansville basketball history, was someone I really enjoyed. There were a lot of players from that area, from that era, that were good. Kurt Begley was someone that I covered in local news, who was, great high school player at Forest Park before coming to Evansville and playing, and he was a part of that 99 team. So there were a lot of guys in that time frame that I really enjoyed being around. And not only, it's always fun when you win, and that team was so successful. So that was a really good time and created many memories.
So Ford Center, the venue that Evansville plays now, 14th season they played there, which hard to believe it's been that long. And growing up in the Evansville area, I went to a few games as a kid. Never broadcast at Roberts Stadium, but obviously used to sit way up there in the press box. And people still to this day talk about how much they miss Roberts Stadium, even though it's been 14, 15 years. How much did you enjoy Roberts Stadium? What was special about that place to you? And then did you enjoy broadcasting way up top like that?
I did enjoy that because it was so unique. And I loved Roberts Stadium. It's funny, I grew up in Indianapolis, and we never, I mentioned when I was in high school, we played a lot of teams around the state. We went to southeastern Indiana a lot. We really never came, outside of going like over to Terre Haute, we never came southwest. And so I really had not been to Evansville much at all in my life, even though I was a big sports fan. Like anything I ever did either took us north or to the southeast, and we never got down to the southwestern part of the state. So until I started covering sports in Evansville, I had never been to Roberts Stadium. And it's funny, I always loved that place because I felt like that was just an exaggerated version of the gyms you would see around the state of Indiana, those great high school gyms that are so iconic. I felt like Roberts Stadium was that, but to a much bigger level. I just thought it had such a unique historic feel to it. And to kind of put an exclamation point on that, I remember Indiana came and played at Roberts Stadium, and I don't remember what year it was. It would have been in the late 90s, maybe 96, 97, somewhere in there, maybe 98. But they came, Bob Knight was coaching, and a lot of friends of mine and even mentors that I had that worked locally on the sports scene in Indianapolis made the trip. And a lot of them were like me. They had never been to Roberts Stadium. And I just remember their reaction to Roberts confirmed the feelings that I had always had, because they thought the same thing, had no idea something this awesome existed. And of course, at that time, the semi-state at the high school level rotated between Terre Haute and Evansville. So I knew a lot of people that had come down for that. I didn't experience all that though until I was working locally, and I just always loved Roberts Stadium.
Talked a lot about, memories in Evansville early on in your career, and you can correct me if I'm wrong with the timeline a bit of your career, but 2006-ish, you latch on to TNT, right, as a pit reporter, and then eventually you kind of get in the play-by-play role around 2010. And broadcasters throughout their career have that one moment where you get good news, maybe give yourself a little fist pump, hey, I made it, or I achieved my goals in my career. So do you have a moment like that, maybe when you latched on to TNT, or a different moment?
Well, I would say that, every progression has kind of been that for me. I know that when I got the opportunity to go to work for MRN Radio late in 2000, I just felt like working, network radio, I could have never imagined an opportunity like that would be put in front of me. And so to get to do that was just, really beyond my wildest dreams. And I felt like at that time, I was just on with this all-star cast of people, because the MRN folks were just incredibly talented broadcasters. And I learned so much there. And then when I had the opportunity to go to TV, end of 06, early 07, and started doing things with Speed and eventually, TNT, that was big. But I'll never forget, in 2009, I did a couple of races on pit road for TNT, and then they called me back in the fall to come and audition for their play-by-play job. And I'll never forget where I was when I got that call. I'll never forget where I was when they called me and told me I got the job, and going through that audition process and just everything that went into that. That was something that, that really changed everything for me. And I think, when you get to do something at that level, perception is so important in our business, and that changed the perception. And, you know, when you can handle certain situations, I think too, then the trust is there to give you more opportunities. So that was great. And then I started, you know, doing the stuff for Fox when FS1 became a thing. I did a season of college football, and, you know, I remember getting to do a game at Oklahoma, and you know, I've done college basketball at some good venues. So all of that, you know, would be what I would call those turning point moments that really make you feel, you know, so humbled and blessed to be able to have been a part of some of the things you've had a chance to be a part of.
What all goes into prep for a race on TV for you?
You know, it's unique because our players don't change a lot, you know, and I've always thought college football was the most difficult prep. I've done that. And, you know, when you're doing it, for, you know, you got a new game every week, two new teams every week. And the college football depth chart is something that's very difficult to dissect and prepare for. You know, racing, it's the same players every week. And so it's kind of the opposite. Instead of trying to figure all the things out that are happening with new people, you're trying to create new stories for the same group of folks. Because, you know, when you're doing a season that's as long as this one is, sometimes storylines can be, you know, short-lived once you get past the foundational stuff of the stats of the particular track where you're racing. So, you know, I'm doing Atlanta this weekend, and I've been watching the races from last year. There were two races at Atlanta last year, so I'm watching those back, conversations with analysts. But one of the big things is when, you know, you do all the notes and you have all that statistical stuff, and it's really no different than what you would do for football or basketball. But once you get on site, you get in the garage and you spend a lot of time talking to the competitors. And that's where a lot of times the good talking points and storylines are born, because, you know, each track is so unique, and you know, some of those talking points shift from week to week.
I like to ask national broadcasters this question. Do you get much social media interaction, social media hate in NASCAR?
We do.
Or I should say critique, not necessarily hate. Yeah.
Oh, I think that's fair. And, you know, I watch something, and I don't know, you're probably a better student of the game than I am. But I watched something, I think it was on the ESPN family, and I want to say Jeremy Schapp was hosting it. But he had some of the primary play-by-play folks from all of the networks on, you know, when it comes to the National Football League. Joe Buck was on there, Mike Tirico. I think Kevin Harlan was a part of it. Maybe Ian Eagle. I'm not sure who all they had, but I remember those. And they were talking about social media. And it was interesting to me that all four of those guys that I mentioned, who are, you know, like Hall of Fame level broadcasters and people that, you know, I mean, just unbelievable at what they do. And they all talked about the importance of ignoring social media because of how damaging it can be mentally, and just, you know, how there's just nothing to gain from it. And it's funny because, you know, social media is such a part of the way we prep. I mean, I utilize it all the time to follow up on storylines and to read the news and to know what the competitors are doing. But, you know, it's two-sided. I mean, you know, you can be on there just like the competitors are. And so you look at a timeline and you see what people are saying. And so it's a very dangerous game. So I'm not active at all as a poster. I try to remove myself as a reader when it comes to the things I've been a part of. And I've gotten much better at that. I would say in the younger portion of my career, you know, I would read it more than I do now. But yeah, I think that's something you have to be very careful of. You know, utilizing it as a tool is one thing. Utilizing it as, you know, a critique or to see what people are saying, I mean, that can be dangerous and probably at times destructive to your own mental mindset.
Look, we've talked pretty well entirely about broadcasting, but you're also a dad, you're also a husband. And in this career, you're not working just 40 hours, 5 days a week. A lot of times it's 7 days a week and more than 8 hours in a day. So has that been a struggle at all for you in terms of the balance between work life and being a dad and being a husband? How have you balanced that throughout your career?
That, you know, that's always been my priority. You know, growing up like I did in Indiana, I mean, you know, the values in the Midwest, and I grew up in a great family, and, you know, family was always first. And I was fortunate, you know, when I grew up that my mother stayed at home and my dad had a job that was very conducive to family life, you know, what I would call a normal job where you work normal hours and he was around at night and all the weekends. You know, I would say that I have been very, very fortunate to get the opportunities that I have and to have been able to advance to the level that I have with my career, but still be able to maintain balance. And I have missed things. You know, we all do. There's no question about that. And the things that I potentially could miss, over the years have created, you know, tremendous stress in my life at times, because I just know how important those things are for me. You know, I'm fortunate my kids have always been very understanding of that and very supportive of what I do, but it stressed me out as a dad, and just knowing that you could miss something that you feel like is very, very important and you want to be there. But I would say across the board, I've won way more than I've lost on that. And, you know, I know when I was working in Indiana, it was really difficult, because, you know, when I lived in Indiana and I was working on a, you know, national level, you know, there are no home games in Evansville. And so that meant I was traveling all the time. Once we moved to Charlotte at the end of 2011, I had a lot more home games. I was doing a lot of studio stuff where I might not get home at 5:30. It might be 7:30, but at least I was home at night, you know, and I wasn't traveling across the country. So, you know, across the board, that's all worked out pretty well. And, you know, now my kids are at an age where, you know, they're off doing their thing. And at times it's more difficult for me to work around their schedule than it is them working around mine. So I would say I've been very lucky in managing all that.
All right. So we're talking here week of February 17th. What's around the corner for you? What's your next week or two look like broadcasting wise?
This weekend, I go to Atlanta Motor Speedway and I'll do the Xfinity Series. We'll do a qualifying show on Friday and do the race on Saturday. And then the next 3 weeks are pretty, you know, busy travel wise. I go to Circuit of the Americas, which is in Austin, Texas, a road course there, which is a really neat venue, next weekend. And then the 2 weekends after that, we'll be out west. We go to Phoenix and do a race there. And then the following weekend, we're in Las Vegas. And usually those schedules are either a late Thursday, early Friday travel, probably a show on the air Friday afternoon or Saturday morning. And then the events are always late Saturday afternoon. So, you know, that's a little bit of a glimpse of what the next month or so looks like. And I'll follow a similar schedule in that regard, probably up through the middle portion of May. And then this summer, things will shift around a bit when I start doing the Prime Video and the TNT stuff. But right now that's what it looks like. And, you know, meetings and that kind of thing during the week.
You got a full slate, Adam. Appreciate you spending about a half hour with us this week. Aces on the air. Congrats on your great career, and again, thanks for your time.
No, thank you so much, Jevin. It's great to be with you, and congratulations to you. I know you're doing great things, and the Evansville basketball community, the Evansville sports community is lucky to have you. So thanks for having me on, and congratulations on everything you're doing.
Thanks, I appreciate that. That wraps up this week's episode, Aces on the Air, brought to you by Taroni's and powered by Learfield. I'm Jevin Rebin. As always, go Aces.